Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Yes, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, you're here. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And it's good to be back and good to have you with us. I don't know if I want to start with the Women's March. It's so exciting. We have exciting news. We even have a poll. We took a poll here at the Weekly Worldview. And I know you're all anxiously anticipating the results of the poll, but I really feel like we should start in California, where I've been watching the Oroville Dam situation with the rain and the water and the spillway and whatnot. I pulled down a story this morning from Reuters talking about how dams have played a vital role in making California America's wealthiest and most populous state. But now there may be a crisis with the Oroville Dam, as years of drought have been broken by tumultuous rain. And they say, Reuters tells us that the crisis in Oroville illustrates the safety risks of the Golden State's aging infrastructure in increasingly populous areas. See, people keep moving to California, but the hippies and the perverts and the thieves running the government there, they don't want to build infrastructure because they love the earth and they want to worship the dirt. And now the dirt may be coming down, not on their heads, not on the heads of the perverts and the thieves and the hippies running the state, but on the poor people in the floodplain below the Oroville Dam. There's an increasing number of residents in the path of catastrophe should the Oroville Dam fail. More rain is predicted this week. And Reuters tells us that over 1,100 of the dams in California were built before 1970. And only about 50 have been built in the last 15 years or so. Because the aforementioned hippies, perverts, and thieves running the state. Well, instead of building infrastructure, which they should have been doing, they've been squandering state resources, brainwashing children, and buying votes. That's what they've been doing. And I just hope the people in the floodplain below the Oroville Dam do not end up paying for the sins of the state, the sins of the elected officials. But we shall see as the rain continues to fall out in California. We will keep our eye on it. I'm sure you will too. And an impending tragedy that I hope is averted just by nature. Hopefully the rain just doesn't quite put the people through. What they don't deserve it. But the hippies, the perverts, and the thieves running the state, they deserve to be drowned in the floodplain below Oroville, in my humble opinion. But now let's move on to news from the war front. I was out of town a couple of weeks ago, and I heard in a news report on a local channel that a Denver RTD officer had been shot and killed here in Denver. So since I got back a couple of weeks ago, I've been hoping to find out the details. Why would someone shoot an RTD security officer? By the way, RTD is the Regional Transportation District. That's the buses and the trains here in the Denver metro area. And apparently Scott Von Lanken, seems like a fine fellow, a good Christian fellow, performing his duties there, protecting the people on the trains and the buses, and he happened to be at the light rail station. And 37-year-old Joshua Cummings, this is according to KUSA 9 News in Denver, 37-year-old Joshua Cummings approached RTD officer Scott Von Lanken from behind and placed a gun against his neck. And one of the women who had stopped the officer to ask if she could catch a light rail train, one of the women says she heard the suspect say something to the effect of, quote, "Do what you are told," unquote. A moment later, she says, the gun fired, and the mortally wounded officer crumpled to the ground. So I hear this on the local news in Houston, I think, and for a couple of weeks I've been wondering who shot this officer. Well, I just found out two nights ago that it was 37-year-old Joshua Cummings, as we find out in this KUSA story. And it turns out 37-year-old Joshua Cummings was immune from reportage because he had Islamic writings on his possession when he was arrested, and he had a copy of the Holy Quran. Says he pledged allegiance to ISIS and all that. As he was arrested, he was praying on his knees to Allah. So the reason I didn't hear about it, and the reason no one in the Denver metro area knew who it was who shot this fine upstanding officer, Scott Van Lanken, was that he's an Islamic terrorist, and you're just not allowed to report on that for some reason. So our condolences go out to the family of Scott Van Lanken. And the whole state should be in a state of shock about this. But you can barely find out what's going on because of the politically correct nature of reporting and all of that. And the seeming love of the Islamic religion amongst the reporters of the mainstream media, which I find it hard to comprehend why it is they love Islam so much. And how they give such deference to the mighty warriors of Allah whenever they strike, but for some reason they do. And so, well, there you have it. We finally gotten to the bottom of who it was who shot Officer Scott Van Lanken. And now we know why. It was a terrorist attack on behalf of the Islamic State right here in Denver, Colorado at the RTD station. You may have heard it here first if you've been trying to find out what's going on. Well, now you know. And deeper we go now into the war file. A Reuters report, astonishing really to me, out of Athens, Greece. Did you people know that Athens has not had a formal mosque since the Greeks drove out the occupying Ottomans in 1833? That's right, no mosques in Athens. In fact, Reuters says that Athens was the only European capital with no mosque. Well, Reuters says to be deprived of such a religious space. But they didn't have any mosques. Well, because there was a war. And they drove out the Ottomans, and so there just hasn't been a deep desire among the Grecian people for mosques. Well, last May, Socialist Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras was going to do something about that. He declared building a mosque in Athens to be long overdue, and he was hell-bent to find other people's money in order to build it. Now, it seems like he borrowed it from Angela Merkel. And he says, out of respect for the Muslims, we're going to build a mosque because we want to actively defend our values, said Alexis Tsipras. He wants to defend the values of Greece by building the Muslims a mosque. So now a new mosque, and quite a big one, is expected to open in April. And I find this to be somewhat illustrative of the state of Western civilization. The mosque to be built in Athens will be built on a former naval base in an old, run-down industrial part of Athens. So the Greeks will surrender a naval base that had fallen into disrepair because the Greeks are busy partying while the world around them crumbled back into the 7th century. And the industrial part of Athens, well, it's pretty run down because nobody in Greece really works anymore. So we might as well build the Muslims a mosque in the formerly industrial area of Athens that's all run down and broken down. Interestingly enough, the plans to build a mosque in Athens were first posited by liberal humanist politicians back in 1890. Yes, an act of parliament was voted upon in 1890 to build a mosque. And because they're a bunch of liberal socialists squandering the state's resources on brainwashing children and buying votes, they haven't even gotten around to building a mosque for about 125 years. It takes them about 125 years to get anything done, good, bad, or indifferent. And here at the Weekly Worldview, we are going to put the building of a mosque in Athens in the bad section. The good, the bad, and it's bad. And there you have it. Western civilization continues its long, slow, tired surrender to the armies of Allah. And meanwhile, here in America, as a matter of fact, the Methodists are surrendering to the Islamists at McMurray University down in Texas. The College Fix reports that world-famous McMurray U. Are you familiar with McMurray? I have a lot of friends who are alumni. He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. You don't have a lot of alumni friends from McMurray U.? Well, it's a Methodist-affiliated university, and they announced this past week that they've dedicated a space in one of the school's dorms for Muslims' daily prayers. So they've set aside a portion of the Methodist University for the Muslims to spread out their dirty rugs and pray to Allah. The chaplain there, he's very happy about it. He's the chaplain and a professor of religion. Dr. Mark, he helped the students in their efforts to persuade the administration to set aside a space for a Muslim prayer. I'm sorry, that was Chaplain Jeff and Dr. Mark. The chaplain and Dr. Mark, a professor of religion, just to be accurate. They both helped the hapless, moronic, brainwashed students at McMurray U. Down there in Texas, in order to in conjunction with the Saudi Student Club. Now, there's about 60 Muslims at McMurray U, and they mostly come from Saudi Arabia. And now they're going to have a place in the formerly Christian University of McMurray U to say their prayers. And we have a quote here from the chaplain. Chaplain Jeff says, quote, "We anticipate over time that we'll have students from a variety of countries and possibly even different religions. We need to learn to live and work together in this world that's increasingly diverse, and then we can truly become better together." That's Chaplain Jeff there at Methodist McMurray U. He'll probably bow himself on a dirty rug and assume the famous bottoms-up position in honor of the mighty warriors of Allah. One more, not from the war, but from the bad religion file. Should I do bad religion, or should I do the Day Without Dykes? Because the Day Without Dykes has been officially announced. We teased it. I think we teased it last week when the clenched-jawed lesbians who organized the Women's March on Washington the day after the inauguration of every woman's best friend, Donald J. Trump, they announced that they were going to call a general strike, the Day Without Dykes, a general strike, the Day Without Dykes. I could be a hip-hop artist. That rhymed. Doesn't have to make a lot of sense as long as it rhymes. Well, the date has been announced, ladies and gentlemen, and I know you've all been anticipating it. The Day Without Dykes officially in the year 2017 will be March 8th. That's when all of the liberal women traumatized by their repudiation in the last election will be staying at home so that we can all experience a day without dykes. They have a statement here, in the spirit of women and their allies coming together for love and liberation. Their allies? What, are these women at war all the time? They have allies? Anyway, in the spirit of women and their allies coming together for love and liberation, we offer a Day Without Dykes, the organizers said in an Instagram post. But they said a day without women. And CNN quoted them accurately, a day without women. I quoted them inaccurately, calling it a day without dykes. So we had a poll here at the Weekly Worldview asking the audience, what will all of the liberal women traumatized in the last election, what will they be doing at home during the day without dykes? And we'll go, should we go number 10 to number 1? We'll go number 1. Number 1, the audience of the Weekly Worldview voted that the women staying home on the day without dykes, the number 1 guess at what they would be doing was doing laundry. Yes, that was number 1, doing laundry. Number 2, cleaning the house. Cleaning the house was number 2. Number 3, preparing meals for their husbands and children. But they don't have husbands, and they don't have children generally. Or at least they don't have children that can stand to be around them, so that's probably not going to happen. Number 4, sorting their Xanax from their Valium into separate bottles. Yeah. Number 5, comparing piercings and tattoos with their teenage daughters who are texting other people while they're comparing piercings and tattoos. Number 6 in the top 10 list of what the clenched-jawed, clipped-haired lesbians will be doing on the day without dykes. Number 6, nagging their partner. Nagging, I said, their partner. Number 7, drinking vodka. That's probably more likely than preparing meals or doing laundry. Number 8 in the top 10 list, ironing their pantsuits. Now, I think they're pretty much polyester. I don't know that they require a lot of ironing, but that's what the audience thought. Number 9, washing their Subaru. That's washing their Subaru, I said. Number 10, finally, what will they be doing as they stay home on the day without dykes? March 8th, 2017, coming to the realization that working a job just like a man just ain't all it's cracked up to be, and embracing the beauty of their femininity. She's got the jack. She's got the jack. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you back here. So I was getting into that solo. I didn't even want to come back. she's got the jack. Please. You're killing me. All right. Now, as promised, we will go into the Bad Religion file in a story from the British Broadcasting Corporation. As you can well imagine, the Church of England, they received a report from the House of Bishops on homosexuality and same-sex marriage is what they did. And, they received the report, but they voted not to take note of the report. Now, how can you vote not to take note of a report? By voting not to take note, it implies that you've taken note of the report. But they voted not to take note because they're suspending disbelief, and they were upset that the report by the House of Bishops there at the Church of England, while it did call for a culture of welcome and support for alleged Christian homosexual faggots, I think I'm going to start using faggots. I know there's some, you know, they like to call themselves certain things. They prefer gay, I think. I like the term faggot. Because a faggot is it's a dead bundle of sticks on carried on a man's back. Did you know that's where the term faggot came from? It's a bundle of sticks on a man's back for no good reason. And so we're going to go with alleged Christians who are actually faggots. The report says we need to have a culture of welcome and support for the faggots. And this is what upset the higher-ups there at the Church of England. They were upset that the report maintained that marriage in the church should only be between a man and a woman. And this freaked out the bishopric there at the Church of England. And so they voted officially not to take note of the report. The Archbishop of Canterbury, he has something to say about this. Archbishop Justin, in wake of the report, called for a radical new Christian inclusion. I said a radical new Christian inclusion. He said, quote, "There are no problems here. There are simply people. This needs to be about our belonging to Christ, all of us, without exclusion." That's the Archbishop of Canterbury. There are no problems, simply people. Everyone without exclusion. Okay, Archbishop, you have it your way. Now, we have a faggot activist and a synod member from New York who tweeted, her name is Lucy, but we don't want to say her because that could offend her. Possibly it was a guy named Lucifer who changed his name to Lucy after he went through transition. So Lucifer said, "Thank you, Synod of the Church of England. With that vote, we've sent a message to the outside world." Unquote. And I just want to let the Archbishop know, and the other members of the bishopric there in the Church of England, that you have not only sent a message to the outside world, but your message has also been received in heaven by the living God. And he's not very happy about this idea of radical new Christian inclusion, including people who march down the street proudly demanding that the church bless and sanctify their perversion and their sin. And see, that's the difference between a Christian and a faggot, is that while a Christian might sin, they don't march down the street demanding that the church recognize and sanctify that sin. If they do sin, they're ashamed of it, and they repent and pray about it and seek assistance from God in resisting sins and devious behavior and all that. But the activists and the faggots, they march down the street and demand that the church marry them off in piles. And so that is the difference, just in case you didn't know, and not to put too fine a point on it, but now you've been educated as to where the difference lies. And so from England and the moral and spiritual collapse of the Church of England into the arms of a pile of fags, we go to Richland, Washington, where a florist has been convicted in Washington State. She violated Washington State's anti-discrimination law. She was condemned unanimously by the Washington State Supreme Court. They said she discriminated against two faggots, Rob and Kurt, when she wouldn't make floral arrangements for their big, bright, fabulous gay wedding. She said, "No, thank you. Here's the number of some other florists if you want to defile one another," which I wouldn't even do that. I wouldn't even recommend another florist. Why would you want to do that to another florist? Just stand up and discriminate against these perverts and let the chips fall where they may, for crying out loud. She cited, by the way, the florist, Baronelle Stutzman. She cited her religious opposition, not to homosexuals, not to homosexuality, not to sin in general, not to perversion, just her opposition to same-sex marriage was all. And the court said, "No, you are discriminating." Let's see here. I've got Stutzman claims that since, well, she claimed in the court case that, hey, since other florists in the area were willing to provide flowers to the two fags, no harm resulted from her refusal to give the flowers, but the court disagreed. Indeed, the court actually cited the case of a New Mexico photographer who refused to take pictures at a wedding ceremony of a couple of fags there in New Mexico. So now the courts around the country are citing these cases in which Christians have simply refused to sacrifice their religious belief on the altar of homosexualization of the culture. And, well, now there's a body of, what do they call it in the courts when they cite things in the past, rulings, the precedent, that's it. There's a precedent now with the New Mexico photographer. They cited that case. And the faggot's lawyer urged the court to uphold state anti-discrimination laws and not to create an exception for religious beliefs. The lawyer noted that many people once held a strong religious belief against interracial marriage, but the court struck down those laws as discriminatory. So there you have it. The mainstreaming of homosexualization as our black brothers and sisters are lumped into the pile with the perverts and the queers. You would think that the colored folks would be standing up and saying, wait a minute, man. Don't be lumping me with a bunch of faggots. Come on now. But I haven't heard a lot of them stand up and say much of anything. So that was the lawyer's argument. The woman argued, look, they could go to another florist. But writing for the majority on the Washington State Supreme Court, Justice Sherrill wrote the following, quote, we emphatically reject the argument of the defendant. This case is no more about access to flowers than civil rights cases were about access to sandwiches. Public accommodation laws serve a broader societal purpose, eradicating barriers to the equal treatment of all citizens. Yeah. Huh. So, and you see, this is the problem. And it's a problem that the Christians created. They created it themselves. As soon as the Christians allowed for the fact that homosexuals were not criminals, because, folks, criminals are not equal citizens by definition. A criminal gives up certain civil rights, and sometimes even their liberty, because they're criminals, and they're not equal citizens. But when the Christians decided that homosexuals would be granted equal rights and not special rights, and that homosexuality certainly was not criminal, well, they set themselves up to be, well, eventually to be cast into prison, probably, or to lose their businesses, or to lose their ability to buy and sell. And we will. As a matter of fact, speaking of losing one's ability to buy and sell, we go to the Mark of the Beast file. Yes, the Mark of the Beast file. This is not a story about Chuck Schumer, oddly enough. No, Chuck does not. But we've become convinced here at the Weekly Worldview that Chuck Schumer is a direct physical descendant of Satan. He's got that look. He's got that satanic, maniacal look. You ever look at that guy's face? I mean, if you were to make a dictionary or an encyclopedic entry for Satan, you could certainly use Chuck Schumer's face. Chuck Schumer as the direct physical descendant of Satan. And then, of course, you could have a pullout with Anthony Weiner's face saying, this is what happens when the spawn of Satan begins to spawn. You end up with the likes of Anthony Weiner. But this story does not involve Schumer or Weiner. This involves the state of Texas and the National Football League. Because according to Breitbart, Texas has been mulling a law mandating that people can only use bathrooms that match their birth gender. Right off, I just want to say I have a problem with the concept of birth gender. Okay? We could just say sex, because when you're born, you're a boy or a girl, and that's your sex. But now we have to say birth gender, because that sufficiently blurs the lines so that we can have a discussion about how far are we going to let the freaks and the deviants go in our society. You can't have that conversation unless you first blur the lines about whether or not we're boys and girls. And they've done that here with the term birth gender, which I believe that's how the state of Texas legislation refers to someone's sex. It's now their birth gender, which means it's up for debate. The Texas legislature says they've introduced legislation that's essential to ensure that sexual predators will not enter women's restrooms. And, well, that's all well and good. But how are you going to define sexual predators? I mean, can you really, is that a crime to be a sexual predator? I mean, if gender, if your sex at birth is up for debate, how can anyone really pass judgment on what a sexual predator or a sexual pervert is? I mean, it becomes somewhat difficult. Well, anyway, now the NFL is warning Texas that if they pass this law to keep the trannies out of the bathroom, that would be a factor when thinking about awarding future events. And they go on to talk about how North Carolina canceled the NCAA postseason tournament. Up to 7 states are currently considering bathroom bills. Bathroom bill. That used to be something you got from the plumber after he fixed a leak, but now we have to pass laws about who can use the bathroom and who cannot. And why is this in the Mark of the Beast file? Well, you'll have to go read about the Mark of the Beast and the idea that they could not buy or sell unless they took the mark. And I think the Mark of the Beast has taken various forms throughout human history. And right about now, at the heart of Western civilization, taking the Mark of the Beast means bowing before the altar of the homosexualists and blurring the lines, so to speak, between what is criminal and what is citizenship. Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. Welcome back. That's right. What you, are you a good citizen? You're a good citizen no matter what. Sometimes a good citizen saves their neighbor from a burning building. And sometimes a good citizen puts on a skirt and goes into the girl's bathroom. It's all the same. It's whatever you want it to be. Who are we to judge? So there you have that. Speaking of judging, I've got a judge here. In Twin Falls, Idaho, this is from KTVB in Twin Falls, a South Central Idaho judge has ordered a 19-year-old man not to have sex with anyone except the person he is married to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you got to wonder, what are the details here? Well, Dwayne Scott Herrera, he's a rapist. Or at least an alleged rapist. He pled guilty to statutory rape of a 14-year-old girl. And he was sentenced to 15 years in prison. But the judge suspended that 15-year sentence for a one-year program. Rather than putting a confessed rapist behind bars, the judge put him on a program, and if Herrera completes the program, he'll be released on probation. But his probation will require celibacy unless he gets married. I'm waiting for the ACLU. I'm surprised they haven't filed some sort of protest or lawsuit against the judge. And the fact that the judge has to issue such a ruling proves that the judge is not qualified to be a judge. This is Judge Randy out in South Central Idaho. Why am I doing this story? I'm sorry about that. It just struck me as odd. What's a liberal judge to do? You've got a confessed rapist who molested a 14-year-old girl. You can't put the bastard to death like you should. And so the judge ends up crafting a rather creative order that, he shouldn't have sex until he gets married, which is what the guy should have been taught in the first place since he was a little kid. But you're not allowed to say that anymore. If you were to tell your coworkers that you teach your children they shouldn't have sex until they get married, they would view you as some kind of a medieval inquisitor of some sort. Yeah. What? How could you do that? That's so archaic. Now, speaking of judges, I've got another judge with an even more creative order, if you can believe that. This is from the Domestic Tranquility File. Judge Patricia in New York has ordered a mother not to get pregnant again until she is able to, quote, get her life together, unquote. Yes, the woman, referred to in court only as Brandy, is a sex worker, which in the formerly sane society we would have called her a hooker or a prostitute. Brandy, the prostitute, is also a drug addict. And a fourth baby was born to Brandy and has been removed from her custody after the baby was born prematurely and immediately showing signs of drug withdrawal. It's her fourth child and her third to be born addicted to drugs. Now, I don't even want to go into the horror of what's been happening with her children, because it literally would make you cry what this woman has put these children through. It's unbelievable. But what is a judge to do? What is a liberal judge to do? Well, in her ruling, Judge Patricia wrote that her goal was to allow Brandy to stabilize her life so she could one day have custody of and love her children. And while that may be a fine sentiment, it's not the appropriate place of a judge to try to facilitate love. Brandy, the prostitute, she had an opportunity to learn how to love her fellow man and her children when she was growing up, but she grew up in America circa the 20th century, 21st century. And so Brandy was ill-equipped to be capable of loving her children and instead has abused her children to the point where Brandy, the prostitute and drug addict, should be put to death for what she's done to her children. If you read the details, I'll put a link up on the website. You can read what this woman has put her children through. But the judge says, the responsibility to get Brandy back on track not only falls on the mother, it's not only Brandy, but it's also Brandy's caseworker. So I wonder if the judge will sentence the caseworkers to some sort of, she's blaming the caseworkers. It's really a sad and tragic story. According to Inside Edition, where I got this story, oddly enough, the decision of the judge has left some in legal circles divided. Divided and confused, some in legal circles, extremely confused. Because they say the judge doesn't have the right to order someone not to have sex and not to get pregnant. And other people say, what's the judge to do? She's trying to teach this woman how to love her children. Well, and this should go out as a warning to parents that if you don't teach your children how to love, well, they could end up being abusive criminals like Brandy, the prostitute drug addict, who I find it very hard to feel sorry for Brandy. Please forgive me. Well, that's just a sad commentary on the state of civilization, which is reflected in the state of ridiculous judicial opinions and rulings that get more and more ridiculous the further and further justice is removed from a knowledge of the living God. That's all. It just starts to get insane and ridiculous. You have judges trying to do what parents should have done. But so many parents, they don't know what to do. They're hapless. They're helpless. They're living in a society that condones irresponsible juvenile behavior and laughs and mocks the idea of two people getting married for life and raising children and being responsible and contributing to the future of civilization. That's a laughingstock joke. And if you try to tell people that that's the way it should be done, well, now you are a right-wing dictator. And so you end up with, well, that, which is just, it's just unbelievable. So let's go now from the ridiculous to the ridiculous into the justice file. We have a report from ABC that the Maryland Court of Special Appeals issued a ruling last Wednesday in the case of 69-year-old Roger Lee Largent. Yes, the Maryland Court of Special Appeals found that Largent's jury conviction last year for second-degree rape, well, they didn't like the fact that it was based on the testimony of a nurse who gave what they called unqualified expert testimony. So they say the nurse was not qualified to give the testimony that she gave, and therefore Roger Lee Largent deserves a new trial. Now, let's keep in mind that Roger Lee Largent had been convicted of a third-degree sex offense back in 1999, and Largent was a registered sex offender as he went on trial for second-degree rape there in Maryland. During questioning by the police, Largent said the following. He said, "I swear on a stack of Bibles that I did not have sex with that woman." So he swore on a stack of Bibles. That's pretty powerful. Well, then the police told him that they found his DNA on the woman, at which point Largent said, "I swear on a stack of Bibles that it was consensual. She came on to me, man." And then the police asked, "Why did you change your story?" And of course, Largent said, "Well, I've changed. My story has changed because I changed. Jesus is with me now. He's right beside me." Which we know obviously was not true, because had Jesus been right beside him, he would have knocked him off his feet at that point. So he tells two different stories, which right there, if you tell two different stories during a rape case, well, you should be immediately condemned and given the punishment of the court. But that doesn't happen anymore. And in fact, now the Maryland Court of Special Appeals has held that 69-year-old Roger Lee Largent deserves another trial. But it is possible that Jesus was right beside Roger Lee Largent when he told those two different stories. Because oddly enough, this ruling by the Maryland Court of Special Appeals was issued 4 days after Largent was found beaten to death in his prison cell there in a Maryland state prison. And from what we understand, no appeals are expected in that case.
Go!
the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Hey, goodbye there to Roger Lee Largent, and welcome to eternity, where you're not allowed to change your story. All right. So from what we understand, unfortunately, the new trial will probably not go forward. Although lawyers had already been hired and they were on staff, and who knows, maybe they will go forward. But what's that now? Well, that's true. There will be a new trial. That's right. In fact, Mr. Largent probably has already stood during his new trial. And well, we can all imagine how that ended. There you go. So we'll go now even deeper into the justice file, because we have another curiously ironic story. Yes, this is from WAFB Baton Rouge, Louisiana. According to the East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office, Tyrone Dominique Williams was shot and killed on Valentine's Day, February 14th. He had forced his way into a home and attempted to rob the people there at gunpoint, is what he did. And he was shot and killed by one of the people there in the house who he was attempting to rob. Now, Tyrone Dominique Williams had two criminal convictions, one for armed robbery back in 2013. And let's see, what did he have? Another one? He had another one, another for simple robbery back in 2014. Now, the judge had sentenced Mr. Williams back in February 2015. This convicted armed robber, multiple convictions of robbery, obviously getting more and more severe from simple robbery to armed robbery. So he was sentenced to 7 years of hard labor by Judge Liu down there in Louisiana. And in December of 2016, he was arrested again for possession with intent to distribute. He was processed and released then from the East Baton Rouge Parish Prison, February 3rd, 2017. And so in the ensuing 10 days or so, he plotted the home invasion, and he carried it out. And despite the fact that the Louisiana justice system was never able to quite impose the sentence that Tyrone Dominique Williams deserved, Tyrone, in fact, received that sentence on Valentine's Day when he was shot and killed by a person there in the house that he was attempting to rob. Police say that Williams' death will likely be ruled a justifiable homicide. A justifiable homicide. And I would say that the person who shot him should receive some form of remuneration from the justice system in Louisiana for finally doing what they should have done. For crying out loud. Armed robbery? Are you kidding me? You stick a gun in someone's face and demand money. If you're convicted, you should be executed. That's all. And in fact, he was. Non-judicial, extrajudicial, I suppose. But the wheels of justice, they grind on. Now, let's go even deeper and darker into the justice file. We go to Ohio State University, as reported by the Washington Post. Reagan Toks, her body was found near a park about 10 miles outside of the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Reagan was a 21-year-old psychology major, and she was 3 months away from graduation when she encountered Brian Goolsbee, a 29-year-old convicted sex offender who had recently been released from prison. This really upsets me. He's been charged with aggravated murder, kidnapping, aggravated robbery, and rape. The charges against Brian Goolsbee, a convicted sex offender, were based on his admissions to police and the fact that his DNA was found at the scene of the crime. Reagan Toke's death occurred just 3 months after Goolsbee was released from prison. He was freed in November after a 5-year incarceration for robbery and attempted rape. And that's why he was a registered sex offender. So that after he brutally raped and murdered this young college student, bureaucrats were able to look him up quickly in the registry because he was well known to all of them. And justice has not yet been dealt to Brian Goolsbee. But it shall be. It shall be in this world or in the next. So what a horrifying story. Will anyone be held responsible in the justice system in the state of Ohio for the fact that Brian Goolsbee was released from prison after an attempted rape conviction? Nobody will be held accountable, but they should be. And I don't know how much blood has to run in the streets before people start to stand up and say, wait a minute, the justice system is a disaster. You process and release these maniacs. They come out and they butcher and rape a college student, and nobody's held accountable. Well, someone should be held accountable. And I suppose they will be in this world or in the next. I just hate to see us have to wait for the next world. Because who will be next? Last week it was a 21-year-old psychology major at the Ohio State University. Next week it could be your sister or your daughter or your mother. So how much is it going to take? Well, I'm already beyond my capacity to tolerate the violence and bloodshed in our midst. I'm already beyond that. And so I've made myself clear, and I hope other people will make themselves clear. And hopefully we can change things. We shall see. I don't hold out a lot of hope for that with the lawyers and all. But meanwhile, let's talk about a tale of two immigrants here in Denver, Colorado. A tale of two immigrants, yes. The first, I'm sure you've heard about, her name is Jeanette Vizguerra. And Vizguerra came to the United States illegally 14 years ago. And she's living here in the state of Colorado. Her deportation order finally came down. Or I should say her stay of deportation expired last week, and she was going to be deported. And so she has taken sanctuary, and the headline, I love this, mother of four takes sanctuary in church. So the only part of that that's true is that she's a mother of four, as far as we know. But she took sanctuary in the First Unitarian Society of Denver Church. Unitarian Church? Is that even considered a church? Isn't the Unitarian Church where spiritual-type hippies go cruising for other spiritual-type hippies? I mean, a Unitarian, you're really going to call that a church? I guess. So now she's a cause celeb around the country because she's taken refuge in the sacred halls of the Unitarian Church. And she's been... She says she's been fighting to stay in this country for 8 years. You could translate that. She's been ducking the INS for 8 years. And she's been having quite a number of children. There's no report as to where her husband is or where the father of any of her four children are, which is sad for her and even sadder for her children. But the leftist news media has latched onto this story, and they're promoting the fact that this dear, poor immigrant woman who just wants to work hard and wants to keep her children with her and maybe even find their daddy someday now is threatened with deportation. And such a sad story, and everybody teared up. Vizguerra says, quote, "This is not just an attack on me, but an attack on the whole immigrant community."
We have to see what's going on to do, how we are going to take action to protect ourselves.
So, yeah, it doesn't really matter what she says. Even though it's relatively nonsensical, she gets the headlines and the tears and the sympathies of people all across the country as their hearts bleed for this sincere, hardworking mother of four who has been convicted of possession of forged documents. But hey, who are we to judge? And so there she is, holed up in the Unitarian Church, where she may meet the father of her next child. It's quite possible. Yeah. Could even be a reporter from CNN or maybe CBS, where we got this story. We'll see. And no doubt you'll be hearing more about Jeanette Vizguerra as she makes her pronouncements from the sanctuary of the Unitarian disco and cruising spot there. Meanwhile, in the same city of Denver, Ever Valles has been arrested and charged in the murder of Tim Cruz. Tim was murdered at the Sheridan Light Rail station earlier this month. Well, Ever Valles was known to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency as an immigration enforcement policy. He has been arrested and accused of car theft. He should have been deported, but for some bureaucratic reason, he was not deported. He posted $5,000 bond, and he was released from jail here in Denver. He's an undocumented immigrant who really just wants to work hard and keep his family together and once in a while shoot and kill people and rob them at the light rail station. That's Ever Valles. I think they call him Ever. Ever Valles. Now, here's a guy that you won't hear too much about, and you certainly will not hear this story juxtaposed to the story of the of Jeanette Vizguerra, pure as the driven snow, crying mother of four, Donald Trump threatening to put her on his own plane and deport her back to wherever she came from. But Ever Valles, in the meanwhile, he remains in jail now, but only after he shot and killed someone. And I would say to Jeanette Vizguerra that it's because of people like Ever Valles that we have to have rules about immigration that sometimes mean that beautiful people like Jeanette Vizguerra have to be deported. You simply cannot forge your documents and try to live here illegally because of the criminals, Ms. Vizguerra. And we hope you understand that. And while the rest of you may pout and cry, I have no sympathy for Jeanette Vizguerra. I do kind of feel sorry for her kids. That's unfortunate. But there's a reason we have to keep illegal immigrants out of the country is because, by definition, they're criminals. And Ever Valles was a criminal. Jeanette Vizguerra, she's a criminal. And it just makes good sense that a nation should be able to control its borders. And I just wish we didn't have to. I'm not a big border guy. I wish we could have open borders. And if we had a justice system that put dogs like Ever Valles down, then nobody would care if Jeanette Vizguerra dummied up her documents and was washing dishes or cleaning hotels or whatever she's doing. If we didn't have a welfare state and we had a justice system that worked, I wouldn't care too much about the Nicaraguan mother of four working at the hotel. It really doesn't bother me that much. But, well, things are what they are. And it's the fault of the justice system and criminals like Ever Valles that immigrant families have to be broken up and deported and all that. So, anyway, finally, an interesting bit of news. Down in Mississippi, according to WLOX Jackson, Mississippi, the state is having a very difficult time acquiring the drugs it uses for lethal injection. Mississippi last carried out an execution back in 2012, and I can assure you there have been a number of murders that have occurred in the state of Mississippi since 2012, but none of the murderers have been put to death because lawyers are making it very difficult for the justice system in Mississippi to acquire the specific concoction of drugs that have been ruled by other lawyers to put people to death humanely. And so, what are they going to do in Mississippi since they haven't been able to execute anyone since 2012? A representative there has introduced House Bill 638, seeking to add the firing squad as a method of execution if the court indeed blocks the use of lethal injection. Representative Andy, down there in the legislature of Mississippi, hopes that the state will adopt the firing squad. And then there will be no complaints. The ACLU may file a complaint, perhaps asserting that the lead levels in the bullets are perhaps unhealthy for people who are subject to the firing squad. But no doubt we'll have people on hand to litigate that. And, it'll just be that ridiculous, that's all. But we will all muddle through. In the hopes that someday the maniacs, the perverts, and the thieves who are running the country and the states will someday come to a knowledge of the living God and come back to their senses and bring us all back from the edge of oblivion, which is where I fear we're teetering toward. But I don't want to leave you on a sad note. But that's it. I'll be back next week, he said. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.